Welcome to the deep dive. Have you ever stopped to think about what turns, fermented grape juice into something worth, well, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions?
It's quite a leap, isn't it?
It really is. What makes someone pay a fortune for a bottle they might never actually drink? It's this whole world of stories and value, and that's exactly what we want to get into today.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so our mission here is to dive into the world of the most expensive wines, the big collections, the record-breaking bottles sold up to 2025. We want to unpack the market, figure out what makes a wine collectible, and we'll talk about some auction results that are just staggering.
Absolutely. It's a market unlike many others.
Okay, so to kick things off, let's talk about a real icon. A single bottle of 1945 Romanée Conti, almost 80 years old now.
Legendary vintage.
Right. It sold for an incredible $558,000 back in 2018 at Sotheby's. And it wasn't just any bottle. It came from Robert Drouin's personal cellar. Sotheby's called it a near-impossible collection.
Wow. That provenance alone adds huge value. And what's
Wow.
really captivating about these kinds of wines is they're more than just a drink, aren't they?
Definitely not just for sipping.
Exactly, they're luxury assets, often from very specific places like Tuscany, Bordeaux, Piedmont, areas with centuries of history, artisan producers. The value goes way beyond just what's in the bottle.
That's such an interesting point, this paradox. A bottle sells for half a million, but the buyer probably won't ever open it. So is the value completely detached from, drinking it?
In many cases, yeah.
What does that tell us, about collecting at this level? Is it about status, legacy, just owning a piece of history?
I think it's a mix of all those things. You've hit on something key there. It
Yeah.
becomes an alternative investment asset. For a lot of these collectors, just possessing something so rare, so significant historically, that's the real reward.
Guardianship, maybe.
Sort of, yeah. Guardianship, the prestige it brings, and of course, the potential for it to appreciate even further. Drinking it, that's often secondary to just owning it. And this connects to the wider market, which, despite the glamour, has seen some, some real ups and downs recently.
Right. I was going to say collecting fine wine sounds incredibly glamorous, almost like something out of a movie. But the market itself has been, well, a bit of a roller coaster, hasn't it?
Especially lately.
That's a very fair way to put it. The fine wine market has definitely had a turbulent few years. Take Burgundy wines, for example.
Okay.
They had this period of just incredible growth, climbed almost 60% at one point, really dramatic. But then a sharp correction followed.
Ouch.
Yeah. And if you look at the LIVEX Fine Wine 1000 Index, that's sort of the main global benchmark, tracks the 1,000 most traded wines, it showed about a 13% decline in the short term.
13%, that's significant. It is, but context is crucial here. Like a lot of investment classes, the market hit these incredible, never-before-seen highs around the pandemic. So a correction wasn't entirely unexpected.
So a pullback from a peak, basically.
Exactly. And if you zoom out, look at the longer picture, say the last 20 years, that same index shows appreciation close to 15%.
Ah, okay. So short-term pain, maybe, but long-term gain.
That's the idea. The real takeaway is that patience is, it's everything in this particular game. Collecting and trading these wines, it's a long-term project. You're going to see peaks, you're going to see troughs. But historically, it shows real resilience. Investors who can hold on think in terms of decades, they tend to be rewarded.
Okay, let's dig into that a bit. That recent performance sounds, well, challenging. But you mentioned resilience. Wine has this incredibly long history, right? So even with these bumps, what gives you confidence in the long term? And what's actually causing these shifts? It's not like people suddenly decided they don't like wine anymore, is it?
No, absolutely not. That's a great point. Consumption stats show appreciation is still strong. And remember, these super expensive bottles, collectors rarely drink them anyway. So the recent decline isn't really about taste. It's more down to a unique mix of macroeconomic factors, really.
Okay, like what?
Well, on the negative side, you've got rising interest rates post-COVID. Central banks hiked rates to fight inflation, right? That makes borrowing more expensive, which tends to hit alternative investments like fine wine.
Makes sense. Less cheap money floating around.
Precisely. Some experts think if rates settle down, maybe around 3% by late 2025, we could see a boost in luxury spending again. Then you add in political conflict.
Yeah, unavoidable these days.
Sadly, yes. Things like the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the situation in the Middle East, they create ripples. Sanctions on wealthy Russian individuals, for instance, hit demand. And general global uncertainty just makes people less willing to take risks on luxury assets.
Okay. And wasn't China a big factor too?
Yeah. Absolutely. China was a huge growth engine for luxury goods, including wine. But the near collapse of their property market has really, as some put it, eviscerated growth forecasts there. That's hit demand hard.
Wow. Okay. So a perfect storm of interest rates, conflict, and China's economy. That sounds pretty bleak.
It does paint a challenging picture. Yes.
But you still mentioned resilience. Some might argue, you know, wine is fundamentally a luxury. It gets hit hard when belts tighten. So how can investors really be confident, even if the very long term looks okay? Are there positive things happening too?
That's a fair challenge, definitely. But what's fascinating is wine's historical staying power. People have been passionate about it for millennia. Collections have existed since glass bottles were even invented.
True, it's deeply ingrained.
Right, and that creates this really dedicated investor base. Plus, the supply is inherently limited. You just can't make more. 1945 Romane Conti. That scarcity is powerful.
So a passionate base and limited supply. What else?
We're also seeing some really interesting shifts in who is buying. The average age of winning bidders at auctions, it's dropped significantly from around 65 down to maybe 40 in recent years.
Oh, interesting. Younger collectors coming in.
Exactly. And the market's becoming more culturally diverse, too. That means more demand, potentially more liquidity for people wanting to sell later. Then there's this flight to quality idea.
What's that?
During uncertain times, investors often gravitate towards what they see as proven, reliable assets. In wine, that often means the big names, the blue chip regions like Burgundy and Bordeaux.
Like turning to gold in a financial storm.
Precisely. People trust things with a long, stable track record. And finally, wine investment often has a low correlation with the wider stock market.
Meaning it doesn't always move in the same direction.
Correct. So when stocks are down, wine might hold steady or even go up. That makes it attractive for diversification, potentially acting as a kind of safe haven when other assets are volatile. It really highlights how connected everything is. Central bank decisions, global events, they directly affect the value of these bottles.
That really does bring us to the core, doesn't it? Forget the market swings for a second. Mm-hmm. What specifically makes a bottle worth investing in? What's the DNA of collectability? What separates just a really good wine from a legendary one?
Right. It really boils down to a few key things. First, the producer.
New on the label.
Absolutely. A legacy of excellence is crucial. Reputations like Domaine de la Romane Conti or Chateau Lafite Rothschild, these are built over decades, sometimes centuries. Their track record makes their vintages consistently sought after.
Okay, producer, what's next?
Second, production. Rarity is king here.
How much was made?
Exactly. Limited production runs, maybe only a few hundred cases, or specific vintages where the weather meant the harvest was tiny. That scarcity drives desire and value. You can't make more. And as bottles get consumed or lost over time, the ones left become even rarer.
Makes sense. Producer, production. What's a third?
And this one is critically important, especially in this market. Provenance.
Meaning?
Meaning it's history, a verifiable, unbroken chain of ownership and storage. You need to know where that bottle has been since it left the winery.
Why is that so critical?
Because fraud is a massive problem in the premium wine world. Some estimates suggest maybe up to 20% of the market could be fakes. That's huge in a $9 billion global market.
20%?
Wow.
Yeah. There was that fascinating documentary, Sour Grapes. It covered Rudy Kernuan, who fooled a lot of people with counterfeit bottles at major auctions.
I remember hearing about that. Incredible story.
It really was. So bottles with a clear documented history showing who owned it, where it was kept, ideally under perfect conditions, they command much higher prices because buyers have confidence they're getting the real deal. Authentication techniques are getting better, of course, but a solid paper trail is still paramount.
That's a huge deal. Really shows why you need to do your homework, especially when so much money is involved. So, okay, if I were thinking about buying, say, at auction, what's a quick red flag for bad provenance?
Well, an obvious one would be a really famous, rare bottle suddenly appearing with almost no known history before that point. Where did it come from? Or maybe the condition doesn't match its supposed age, the label looks too new, or the fill level in the bottle is suspiciously low. Anything that seems off or undocumented needs serious investigation. Always ask for documentation.
Good practical advice. Okay, now for the really fun part. Let's uncork the records. All these factors, producer, rarity, provenance, market forces, What does it all mean for the actual prices? What are the biggest sales we've seen? Do you have a favorite story among these?
Oh, absolutely. This is where it gets truly wild. Let's start with collections. That Henri Geyer Cellar auction in 2018, 1,000 bottles went for $35 million.
$35 million.
Yep, including a single 1986 Rieschberg for $58,000. Part of the value there was Geyer's meticulous method. He used longer corks, wax seals, so the wines were incredibly well preserved.
Amazing. What else?
Then there was the Transcendent Wines auction in Hong Kong 2019, 17,000 bottles.
17,000.
Yeah, sold for $29.8 million. Owned by some anonymous fifth-generation developer, then maybe the one everyone's watching now is Pierre Chen's Ultimate Wine Collection.
Ah, yes, I've heard about this one.
The first part already brought in $16.8 million last year. He has 25,000 bottles in total. The wholesale is expected to go well over $50 million. Could be the most expensive ever.
Just incredible scale.
Right. And remember that Robert Drummond cellar, the one with the $500,000 Romani Conti? That wholesale brought in $7.3 million. Even Bill Kalf, the billionaire known for fighting wine fraud.
Oh, the irony.
Exactly. He sold his own, presumably very well-vetted collection back in 2016 for about $29.8 million US at the time.
Mind-boggling figures for collections. But what about single bottles? What's the absolute peak price tag?
Okay, so for a standard 750 milliliter bottle, that 1945 Romane Conti at $558,000 is still the champ. But the most expensive single vessel ever sold was actually a 6 liter bottle that's called an Imperial of Setting Wines 2019 Cabernet Sauvignon, the Glass Slipper Vineyard.
6 liters, how much?
$1 million. In 2021, it was sold for charity, which adds another layer, but still $1 million.
Wow. Any other big ones?
Definitely. There's another Imperial, this time a Cheval Blanc 1947. Went for $304,375 back in 2010. Apparently, it's the only known Imperial format bottle of that legendary vintage. Came from some secret Swiss collection.
Just the stories behind them.
Exactly. Like the shipwrecked champagne. Heidsieck and Kalmanopol 1907 vintage.
Shipwrecked.
Yeah. Rescued after 80 years on the bottom of the Baltic Sea, sunk by a German U-boat in World War I. A bottle sold for $273,000 in 2016. Imagine tasting that, or rather owning it.
Unbelievable. History in a bottle, literally.
And speaking of history, that Chateau Lafite 1787, rumored to have belonged to Thomas Jefferson, sold for $156,000 way back in 1985. That's easily over $450,000 today. That one was purely about the story, the pedigree. Nobody expected it to be drinkable, and there were big fights about whether it was even genuinely Jefferson's.
A bottle you can't drink, bought for the story and the controversy.
Right.
That says it all about value beyond consumption, doesn't it?
It really does. There's also a famous white wine, an 1811 Chateau Duquesne. Super rare, only about 10 exist. One sold privately for $117,000 and is apparently kept behind bulletproof glass.
Bulletproof glass.
And a Jeroboam, that's 3 liters of Chateau Mouton Rothschild 1945, engraved with a V for victory after WWII, sold for over $114,000 back in 1997. And just recently, the most expensive champagne title went to a bottle called Avenue Frache, sold for $2.5 million in 2022 to some Italian crypto guys. Shows how new money enters the market too.
$2.5 million for champagne.
It's also worth just quickly mentioning the Ukraine war impact again. Supply chains, inflation. It's pushed up costs in the wine industry maybe 30% recently, and fine wine prices have definitely reflected that, showing significant growth, partly just to cover those rising costs, another layer driving prices.
It's just, the
Yes.
scale is immense. The stories are incredible. It really is this unique intersection of history, art, commerce, and, well, desire. It constantly makes you rethink what value even means.
Absolutely.
So what a journey. Through this sometimes unpredictable market, the things that make a wine collectible, and these just legendary sales figures, it's clear it's about so much more than just fermented grapes.
Definitely. It's history, rarity, human passion all rolled into one.
Which does bring up that big question you touched on earlier.
Right. Given the sums, the history, the provenance issues, the market swings, what does value ultimately mean in this world? Is it the potential taste, the story, the investment return, or just the sheer joy of owning this piece of liquid history?
Or maybe it's different for every single collector.
I suspect so. For some, it's purely an asset, like holding gold. For others, it's about connecting with the past, holding something tangible that has survived generations. That allure is hard to quantify.
It really is something to think about, isn't it? We hope this deep dive gave you all a bit of insight into this, well, truly captivating market. And maybe makes you think about what makes something precious to you, whether it's a rare wine or something else entirely.